I have been using Echo Auto for the last 3 weeks and testing how good this product works. What I can share with you now is that the ability for Alexa, the digital assistant, to understand commands while music is playing or under the ambient noise of driving in general is pretty impressive. This level of quality can also be said for other digital assistants like Siri, Cortana, Hey Google, and others. In episode 96, Head of Evangelism for Search for Microsoft, Christy Olson, shares how the world of digital assistants has gone from a place of search to a place of action. More and more, the way users interact with a digital assistant, also sometimes known as a voice assistant, leads to a particular action being performed. It's like your significant other finishing your sentence. The traditional use cases are to ask a digital assistant, Cortana, what is the address to Mandalay Bay Hotel? This triggers the digital assistant's search functionality. In normal human behavior, what comes next after inquiring about a location is actually getting there. And this is where digital assistants are becoming a place of action. After Cortana replies with the address, the next question offered by Cortana is, would you like me to take you there? With more adoption of digital assistants in our homes, cars, and on our bodies, i.e. mobile phones, the practical applications are becoming more apparent. As stated in the 2019 Microsoft Voice Report, which was authored by Olson, she describes the evolution of digital assistants and how businesses can think concretely about integrating this technology into their own business. So stay tuned for episode 96 and this enlightening episode with Mrs. Christy Olson. Also, visit the episode page to download the 2019 Microsoft Voice Report so that you can learn more about this. Listeners, before we get to today's episode, I want to share with you the three most popular questions that I often get about buying a car. As from previous episodes, you've been hearing about listener stories on their car buying or even selling experiences. And so it might be a good idea to summarize some of these common scenarios and questions that I get. Don't forget to visit WiscoWeeklyPod.com and sign up for our email list, and you can receive exclusive access to information and even giveaways. We just did a giveaway for 15 tickets to the Orange County Auto Show, and they were swept up very, very fast. And so we'll be having more giveaways and promotions, so be sure you sign up for our email list and follow Wisco Weekly on social media. Here's our first popular question that we get. Is it better to lease or buy? This is a question that requires more dialogue, as the benefits of leasing carry different motivators. What I will share with you, though, is that the ideal world is to have options. Maybe the option is to have a car that you lease and also have a car that you own. This is usually the case in a household with a married couple. Or perhaps the option is that you have a car that you lease and you regularly rely on public transportation or ride-hailing to get around. So thinking of leasing versus buying in this sense opens up the mind on which version of car ownership is right for you. The second question is a follow-up to the first, and that is, but my dad tells me I shouldn't lease because he got screwed, so shouldn't I listen to him? There is a more direct answer to this, and it's found in the history of leasing. Presuming, and that is the underlying presumption, presuming that your parents leased a car before 1990, or maybe they heard horror stories of leasing around this time, it's because leasing followed a business model of an open-end lease. An open-end lease is where the value of the vehicle upon the maturity date is subject to the retailer's value of that car. This is one of the reasons where retailers have been given a bad name. Think of this like you pay a monthly apartment rent of $1,500 for 1 year. After that 1 year is over, to continue to live in the same location, your landlord says, well, I think the market value of your apartment is $2,000. Does your landlord have the right to do that? Sure, of course. Do you have the option to walk away? Yes, of course. Does that give you a sour taste in your mouth? Yes, and that taste is what soured an entire generation of lessees that eventually passed on this sentiment to the next generation. So I hope this understanding of an open-ended lease clarifies, perhaps, the sentiment of your parents on why they are anti-leasing. To hear the last question, stay tuned for the end of this episode. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitete, willkommen, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. This is the podcast that we're giving you university education on the automotive and mobility space. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco. This podcast episode is brought to you by Re-Raw Irish Pub Restaurant and Automotive Mastermind. I'm here in Mandalay Bay at Re-Raw Irish Pub with my guest today. And my first question to you listeners is, how many times today have you used a digital assistant? Maybe once, maybe twice. I myself have used it twice already. And the point is not really that you've used it 10 or 20 times in a day. It's the fact that even that one time that you used it, that it is applying some type of efficiency in your life. Today's guest is going to share with us more information about using a digital assistant. She's the head of evangelism for search for Microsoft. She is a top PPC rated marketer, and she's also a graduate of the University of Idaho. She's a proud Vandal. Woohoo! Men, women, and children, please welcome to the show, Mrs. Christy Olson.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Christy, for being here. I look forward to having this discussion with you.
It's going to be fun.
So, Christy, I thought one of the things actually we can get to first in doing some research for you, research on you, there was something, there was a particular video that I saw in which it looked like you were giving your interview in your office. And in the back wall, there was a T-shirt that you have hung, which obviously, if you're hanging a T-shirt, there's a particular purpose. There's a there's a specific intent why it's up there. And the shirt says, and I like to keep a clean show, but for the purposes of this episode, in order to make the impact made, the shirt says, "Do epic shit."
It does. And
please tell us more.
I love it. So as you said, I work for Microsoft, and we have another gentleman who's very similar role to myself. He is one of our tech evangelists, James Whitaker, and he has written a handful of books on branding, storytelling, and he speaks across the globe similar to myself. He essentially has the mantra of do epic shit every day. And so that T-shirt stems from one of his books and a lot of his talks where he says, you know, you can do anything with your life, but if you aren't doing what you love, and if you aren't going out there and really applying yourself to what you do, you're probably just wasting both your time and other people's time. So his mantra is do epic shit every day and make sure that you love what you do, because it'll show in your work.
Well, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to do some epic shit here. Okay, well, that's actually excellent. That's a good motto. And I hope listeners that have just tuned into this, I hope at whatever time in the day you're listening to this, I hope the rest of your day you do epic shit. So, Christy, you're here at Digital Dealer, and you're going to be giving a talk on SEO voice optimizations, preparing for the world of voice. And Microsoft has put out a voice report, and I thought we could kind of address some of the things in that report. So first thing is, there's a statement in the report, and listeners, I will put a link to this voice report on the episode page. So there's a statement that says, search is moving from a place of answers to a state of action. And this, first off, this voice report was authored by you.
Correct.
So this is even better. So search is moving from a place of answers to a state of action. Can you explain this, please?
Yes. So if you think about search in the last decade plus, because it's been around almost 20 years now, as crazy as that sounds, it started off in the place where you would essentially ask a question and you'd get 10 blue links as an answer. However, we're moving to this era where you ask the assistant a question and it's not just giving you an answer, but it enables you to do something, to take that next step. So it's, I might ask a question like you joked in the intro, how many of you have used a digital assistant this morning? For me, it's, where's the reverb room? How do I find it? And am I late? Three questions I would ask, boom, 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 right away to Cortana and get my answer coming back. And it's the getting that answer, but then on the, oh, here's the reverb room, who's the address? Do you want directions on how to get there? Do you want step-by-step guidance of how to walk through the casino? Because unfortunately for me, I get lost very easily, especially in the casinos, of how do you find something? So as we think about this from a marketer's perspective or a business owner's perspective, it's no longer just about making sure your website is showing up within the search results. You also want to be thinking about those questions that people are asking and what is their intent behind the question? What is it that they want to do? So that you can make sure you enable experiences for them to take the action or the next step. If you're an automotive dealer, you don't just want them to find out about the latest car. You're hopefully hoping that they'll purchase that car and that they purchase the car from you. So how do you get from the point of asking, and I'll just use the example of a 2019 Subaru Forester, to walking through the door in your dealership, taking a test drive, and then purchasing or getting more information to make that purchase directly from you.
And so, you know, you actually, you touched upon a lot of things there. And so, for instance, again, in this voice report, you have listed how are people using digital assistants today? And so in the case of either you coming here to ReRaw Restaurant or in the case of using searching for a Subaru. So people are searching for businesses. They're asking for directions, searching for a quick fact, making a shopping list, researching a product or a service. You know, all these are methods right now of how people are using a digital assistant. Where is the kind of the pinnacle of when using a digital assistant turns into e-commerce?
So we're getting to that point today. So as you just mentioned, we've been asking this, and the 2019 voice report is actually the third year in a row that I've done a bunch of surveys and research understanding how are people using assistants and how are people using voice and how's it changed over the last 3 years. And what we saw in the report this year as we did our survey and we're talking to people is, number one, roughly 70% of people had been using a digital assistant in the previous 6 months, which is huge. It's also, though, not so surprising when you think your cell phone has a digital assistant on it. So
but I think
that
it's,
barrier to entry.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things, too, where it's like a lot of people probably don't even realize, you know, it I guess even the term digital assistant is almost like a new terminology that's coming around, because usually you just, I'm using Alexa, I'm using Siri, I'm using Cortana. You just refer to it by its proper name.
Exactly. And so part of it is because it's on a device that most of us have in our pocket and we use every day, you use it for things that you might not even be aware of. So it started off as finding a fact, really was how people did. They're asking really simple questions or getting directions, maybe finding a business. And what we're starting to see is the use cases and the scenarios are getting much more complex. We're going essentially from asking those basic questions to wanting to get to an action state. So I want to make a purchase of this. I want to get a reservation for here. I want to book an appointment or change, cancel, update an appointment to a doctor, a car dealer, you fill in the blank. And so we're seeing that people are using the technology a lot more, and how they're adopting it is to do more specific tasks. I didn't put in the report, but because it's, as I write these and I start thinking about how do I want to talk to it, it's more of you think about the, I want to go, I want to do, I want to see, I want to interact.
And then part of it too, as these use cases are becoming more available, is then this becomes the conversational AI element of it, in the fact that it's no longer just asking one question, but there is now this, what the next 20 possible 20 questions are, and has it kind of preloaded so that it can, answer in the case of myself asking those questions.
Exactly. And that's where we're going with e-commerce is today. It's really difficult to do complicated tasks. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, and even today, and I've talked about this pretty often with other individuals, is that, you know, if you want to purchase something, let's just say, I want to purchase, your t-shirt. Mm. So in order to do that,
by the way, do you see my t-shirt?
I do. Oh, sorry. So Dennis is wearing a very nice, blue and white striped t-shirt with cars and scooters on it. I don't know the brand.
It's actually Penguin. And, you know, this is kind of my uniform. So I came from one of those, Catholic private schools where you wear uniforms, right? So like, I bought this shirt, I don't know, a few months ago, and now I've totally played it out. I mean, it's actually getting faded. I'm going to do it until I get holes in the shirt, but I love this shirt.
Nice.
So,
let's say, so it's Penguin. I didn't know that. Yes. But if I see your shirt, there's a couple ways you can engage trying to figure out how do you purchase it. So if I were to ask a digital assistant, look for this shirt with these characteristics, it's going to come back with, here's a bunch of possibilities. The next one is, great, where do I buy it? So then you ask a follow-up question, and then it might come back and say, it's available at Nordstrom, Macy's, fill in the blank for the different stores. Well, then once you know where you want to purchase it, and you know what shirt it is, then you have to go down the path of what size, where do you want it delivered? How soon do you want it delivered? So you start going through this thing of e-commerce that right now today, it's sort of clunky because the amount of questions that it asks, it is different for every store. It's different for every dealership. It's different for every business. And so businesses need to start developing tools and technology on the back end to make it easier for the digital assistants to understand that purchase path and how to guide the consumer through that. We essentially call it the purchase decision journey or path to purchase. How to guide them through that path. Because if a digital assistant isn't aware of your specific store, it makes it really tough to know all the phases it has to ask to get all the information to then enable that purchase on the back end.
Is there, so, you know, I think one of the things that would pertain a lot to specifically dealers, right? Dealers are obviously a retailing business. Mm-hmm. So at some point you're having this conversation with Cortana, but on the flip side of it, the dealers, they're going to want to eventually interject some form of advertisement.
Yes.
Is that possible in a digital assistant?
So right now, there are no pay-to-play scenarios, or there aren't pay-to-play scenarios in the digital assistants. But when you ask a question, the digital assistant can go a couple of different places to get answers. Okay. One of them is directly through the search results. So if I ask a question specific about a specific dealership, it'll go to your website, crawl your website, and try to find answers there. A little known fact, and I'm trying to remember if I touch upon it in this report, if it was our previous voice report that we put out in 2018, is that conversational AI, so chatbots, essentially a digital assistant, if it has been enabled to speak to a chatbot, meaning with a framework we use to develop that chatbot, says, yes, have Cortana, Alexa, Google ask me questions, they can go to the chatbot to get the answers. So that's more so how you get your advertisement. So if I'm asking a question, I'll go back to my Subaru Forester just because I know, I'll talk about what I know. I bought a Subaru Forester this last October.
Amazing car.
I'm probably gonna need an oil change at some point in time. I don't know how many thousands of miles you're supposed to go without getting, or with getting one, but I'm probably way over that.
10,000 or a year.
Yeah, so I'm probably up there. Yeah. So I'm probably getting pretty, might be a little bit over that, might be a little bit close. And so the question I might ask is like, hey Cortana, I need to get an oil change. What time it, like, when can I get it and where? So hopefully the dealership is hoping I'll come back directly to them. So it'll say, here's the dealership you bought it at. Do you want me to check their schedule? Do you want to check for appointments? So the next step is, if the dealership has enabled their content, enabled their platforms to engage with the digital assistant, Cortana could book it for me where she knows where I made that purchase. She already knows I have a relationship with that company and that vendor. Make it as seamless as possible so that Cortana can knows my schedule, because I'm anal retentive. I put everything in my work calendar. So she knows when I'm available, when I'm not available, and can essentially book that appointment.
That's
so amazing. I can take the car and drop it off. And I don't have, no offense, sorry dealerships, I don't have to call your 1-800, I don't have to call your number and try to schedule with your scheduling system.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's, I think that's one of the interesting things that's coming up in the whole concept of the customer experience, right? It's, we know that there are a lot of pain points that customers face when interacting with a dealership, not just buying a car, but servicing a car. You know, at some point you just want to get to the point where you are just booking things online, or you're just doing things the way you want to do it. And certainly the, you know, the operations of dealerships, it's slow to adapt to these things. But as technology starts to be more integrated into a dealership, i.e. by virtue of Cortana and Microsoft, there's easier ways now for customers to manage and maintain their own vehicle. So just a kind of a follow-up question on the whole, like, advertising element of a digital assistant. So because there is not a specific way that an automaker or a dealership can specifically interject an ad into a digital assistant, help me understand how a dealership operation could bring on
a digital assistant and have that operation be financially sustainable?
Yes.
And again, maybe that's a question too that doesn't have an answer just yet, but I'm curious.
It doesn't have a specific answer today, but it's coming.
Okay.
So in terms of being, because part of it's going to be the question of, do you already have somebody on staff that can do the coding
exactly.
and do the back
right.
end? If you don't, you have to hire someone. That can be expensive. And I will acknowledge that. If you have someone that's somewhat tech savvy, so a colleague of mine, Jeff Colon, he decided that we didn't have our own chatbot and we didn't really have the conversational interface for Microsoft advertising. So he started about a year ago developing one for us. So he created a chatbot and he created essentially a digital assistant and a voice action where you can ask Cortana or Siri a specific question. It goes out and gets information from our services. He created that. He does not have a coding background.
Okay.
It took a little bit of time. And it probably is not the most elegant, sorry, Jeff, of all the different bots out there. But it's somebody that did not have a tech background that was able to go in and teach himself and able to create something. So you can start small and create something that might not be the most elaborate tool or assistant yep. out there in order to get your feet in the water and start figuring out how are people using it? How can you get to the point where people can ask the question and get information about scheduling appointments, services. Maybe it's basic information on rough costs when you're mm-hmm. going in for the servicing mm-hmm. department or what vehicles you have on the lot today. So if I know that I want to purchase a 2019 Subaru Forester, I can say, oh, you've got these five and here's the features and the rough price range of those vehicles that you have available. So you can start small and then start to develop really cool, super fun integrated apps that then go to the automated scheduling,
yep,
the schedule the test drive, yeah. do the get the appointments booked where if something were to happen that you can automatically notify me directly through my Cortana to tell me, oh, the appointment window changed 15 minutes. Can you come earlier? Can you come later? Your car is ready. Come pick it up or do the automated billing. So I'd say it's more so dipping your toes in the water to get started and understanding how are people that come to your dealership, how are your customers using tools today, and how do you want to enable them to make it easier for them to engage with you directly?
So I think this almost then begs the question of, you know, when it comes to digital marketing and as it relates to dealerships, a lot of times that this is information or this is responsibilities that are outsourced to a vendor, but certainly more and more dealerships are adopting some type of digital marketing director who now is specifically more in tune with digital marketing as opposed to traditional methods of advertising. And now, because there's so much technology available, and while they have, let's say they've mastered now PPC and SEO and Facebook advertising and these kinds of advertising outlets, now here comes digital assistants. So in the case where you said Jeff doesn't really know so much about this, how would you advise somebody who is you know, they understand the principles of digital mm-hmm. marketing and now they want to graduate to how to develop a chatbot?
Yeah.
How would you what would be the steps or the background that you would recommend for them to take?
Yes. So I actually can break this apart into two sections of your question. One you didn't ask, but I think it's worth okay. sort of answering. So first off, there's two different ways you can think about optimizing for the digital assistants. One is through the conversational AI and the chatbot standpoint of going down that conversational AI path. And that's where you're creating a tool or technology that is an assistant to help your customers that can engage with other digital assistants.
Okay.
Before I answer that question, let me go the first route is the basic, before you even go down that path, and I'd say that is phase two or phase three is creating your own assistant.
Okay.
Phase one is understanding how the digital assistants pull your existing data and information to answer questions. So when you ask a question about a Subaru Forester, it knows to go to Subaru.com, not to go to a page of Toyota comparing the Pilot to the Forester,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Toyota-owned page. So that is voice SEO optimization. You already probably are doing organic search, but it's understanding how do you update your content on your website to know the questions people are asking and provide almost answer and response, but not necessarily FAQs so that your content is eligible to be pulled into that spoken response a digital assistant gives.
That's interesting, man. I can let's
pull into two areas because I can go the second path, which I'll answer the second path, but I want to talk about that first because before you try to do all the coding and have to learn something brand new, SEO is already challenging enough. This is just adding an extra layer into SEO. It is not technically different from what you're doing today. It is more so on the content creation side. So like Brent Weiss is out there today. He has a hour long webinar on content engagement, content strategy, understanding like how do you develop your content plan. This is a type of content plan. It's updating your existing content or adding new content that is conversational in nature and focus so that as people are asking questions, you have those responses so the digital assistant can pull it from your site and speak it aloud. And that's what I'm talking about this afternoon.
That's amazing. If anything, I think that answers a lot because you are taking your existing framework and then you are just retooling it so that it is properly set up in the language that you would need to then take that over into your conversation AI tool.
Yes, so. And where it's evolving to, and it's not here yet, so I'm gonna throw out some technical stuff. Sorry if you guys aren't super technical on the back end, but there is schema.org. Schema is data markup that you can put on the website on the back end that gives more context and more information to the search engines directly. So Microsoft and Google and pretty much all the search engines, we have people that work with Schema's backend. It goes through the WC3.org. There is an entire automotive vertical that essentially says, what are the different schema and the markups you'd want for the automotive sector? Similar to that, since about 2015, 2016, there has been a group within Schema to essentially create voice schema.
Interesting.
Yes, it is right now in a beta. It has not been officially adopted to have voice schema. But it is in the infancy stages of essentially being able to put schema markup or essentially microdata. It's either microdata, JSON-LD content on the back end of your site to tell a digital assistant, if you're crawling my site, this is what would be the spoken version of the content.
Yeah, that's...
It's not there yet.
How far away is that?
So as of January this last year, it went into open beta. What that means is they essentially rolled it out to a very specific niche and a very specific vertical. For people who are doing SEO, you might heard of AMP, Accelerated Mobile Pages, through Google, which essentially is just lightning fast load of pages. It is a similar rollout to AMP, where it is starting in the news verticals. For the voice schema, because right now they're trying to address the specific news, the specific use case of people asking about news and information related to news stories. And so right now if you go to schema.org and look for voice, it'll give you very specific guidance on how to implement in the news vertical. Now, what I will say is if you think of AMP started as a news related product across both Google and Bing, and then it rolled out to other verticals within about a year to 2 years. So it took a while to get the publishers to understand how do they use it, how do they adopt it, what's working, what's not working, what are the other scenarios that have to be developed into the code to make it work and function correctly. That's sort of the direction it's coming right now with voice schema markup. We're starting with a small niche vertical, and then we're expanding out to understand what else do we need to ask, what are the questions, what else would we have to put into the code to make sure that we get the right responses. So when a digital assistant's looking for an answer, it knows not only what to speak, but it has more context of what type of questions would be asked to get this answer. What are the actions that would come to it? How would you connect with the tools or the software on the back end if you're trying to do a specific action like a purchase, an appointment, et cetera?
That's
so
amazing.
It's early on. So what I would say is start with your SEO. Start with something that you're already doing that you can just tweak in a little bit of way of having a more of a voice strategy of understanding what are the questions people are asking. And you might think, well, that's going to take me a lot of time. I don't know. You have somebody answering the phones at your dealership. Somebody is hearing questions from your customers on a regular basis.
If I understand you, it's not like just don't be lazy. There are ways that you could figure out what questions people are asking, even though the task might be daunting initially. Because that was my first thought, right? My first reaction was like, that's daunting. Where do you start? And yeah, it's like, well, look, all right, let's go to your BDC department. Let's go to the people that are answering phones. You can, that'll give you easily 50 questions right there, and then just start filling in the bubbles.
Exactly. And quick story, and then eventually I promise I will get to the chatbots and how do you create them and go down that path. So with Microsoft, I work not only in the automotive sector, but I work in a lot of different sectors. I had a regional manager.
But the most important one is the automotive sector.
Of course.
Okay.
I had a regional director for Toyota come and meet me in the office because they were having a challenge with one of their sites and they could not figure out what the heck was going on. And it was that he was a regional director, but they had one specific brand site. They spent a lot of time understanding the questions people were asking about Toyota Safety Sense. And so they built out for their specific regional dealership group this massive page related to all the questions they heard around Toyota Safety Sense.
Okay.
And it was not perfect from an SEO standpoint, but pretty darn close. It was well thought through. It had really great in-depth content. It had very specific questions that they heard because they were getting sick of answering the phone lines and answering. There's some sort of recall, I think, that happened around it. So they created this amazing page of content. They end up becoming what's called a featured snippet within Google and Bing, meaning they were the top of the search result response, which also means they were the spoken response for Siri, Cortana, Google, and Alexa.
That's awesome.
Yes. But what that also meant is they would be the spoken response, and then people would want to know, okay, great, here's what's happening with Toyota Safety Sense. Now I want to book an appointment. And so they would ask that next follow-up question is, I got the information I need, schedule an appointment, which would call a specific dealership in their dealer group. Okay. So they had one dealership that was getting hundreds of phone calls from across the country.
Yeah.
To people trying to book appointments to get this thing with Toyota Safety Sense fixed,
mm-hmm.
which was great because it meant that they had a lot more traffic coming through. They heard the questions and they answered them. They answered them so well, they beat out Toyota.com.
Yeah, and answered it so well that it got to the point of the e-commerce side. I mean, right?
Exactly.
Like at some point, a lot of retailers and automakers, for the more, that's the end game in all this. They want to get to that point of transaction.
And the funny part is they came to me because they're like, great, we're getting all these, we're a Pacific Northwest dealer group and we're getting calls from the East Coast and the Midwest and we can't help them.
Nice job, Chris.
What do we do next? I'm like, that's a great question.
It's a great problem.
Like, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
You need to partner with dealer groups that work with Toyota somewhere over there that can you can like direct those customers to, because when the customer hears the response from a digital assistant, you don't know that it's a Toyota dealership in Portland, Oregon, or Seattle. Mm-hmm. You just know it's coming from a Toyota dealership.
Right.
So when they ask, like, great, connect me with that dealership to set up my appointment, the customers assumed it would be directed to their closest nearby dealership, not the dealership that created that original content.
I wonder
it's sort of a twofold story because it's like, hey, it's great because they became the spoken response, but then they had to figure out how do we make people know that we are only in this region and we cannot help you if you're in Wisconsin unless you want to drive to Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Right now, because there isn't always alignment between tier one, tier two, tier three in terms of everybody is trying to create great content that answers specific questions. So if a tier three then becomes that spoken response, how do you then funnel it back upstream to a tier one that can say, here's who else is available. But I have to say it was hats off to the tier two and tier three that went out there and said, what are the most common questions we're getting? Because we want to be able to answer them online so people don't have to call us to get that specific answer on a regular basis. Because what they said is their phone lines were just, they're receiving so many calls with the same five or six questions that even their main person on the phone line was getting sick of hearing that.
Yeah. How much more time do you have?
So I speak at 10. So I've got probably 15 more minutes.
Okay. So let's go to the last question here then. So once dealers have adopted a digital assistant into their operation, then there comes the time of providing education to customers about a digital assistant and how it's used and why you should use it and essentially marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
You are a master storyteller. I was hoping that maybe you could provide some best tips and practices on how a business, how a retail operation can best craft a story to tell.
First off, it's going to be a little bit less about telling a story, but making sure people understand what it is and how to use it. So as we think about this space today, the educational component of what is a digital assistant, what it does, it's going to be different for a dealership than it would be for like a Nordstrom or a e-commerce or a restaurant. So letting people know like, hey, we created this tool that you can use, that you can engage with voice or text that allows you to engage with us in these ways. So you can schedule an appointment, you can get information about vehicles, you can whatever all the different services you want it to have. So first off is just understanding what is the problem you're trying to solve? What is your customer's problem? Making sure those align, and then letting the customers know, here's what we have. One, and this is a different vertical again, apologize for different vertical use cases because I don't know as many in the automotive space. If you think about today, there's this thing called a voice action, meaning I go, hey, Cortana, book me a restaurant tonight in Vegas for 8 people near this location. So I'm essentially doing a request, and you could specify a specific company like ask OpenTable, ask Yelp. That would be considered a voice action. So it's not necessarily a chatbot, but that voice action. You need to tell people what the action is. You need to tell people how to use it. So because right now you have a lot of assistants, you have a lot of actions, but there's tens of thousands of them. If your customer doesn't know it exists, if they don't know how to use it, they're not going to engage with it. So NPR is actually my favorite example of a company that's doing a broadcast that's doing a good job explaining. They started a little over a year ago at the end of a lot of their segments saying, hey, you can get more information. All you have to do is ask Siri, ask Cortana to play the morning edition on NPR. And so they started explaining, hey, we have this thing. It tells you how to do it. Ask Siri, Cortana, Google. Two, what do you want to do? Play what the engagement is. Play this show on NPR to get more information, to listen and do it again. So essentially as a dealership, granted NPR is a radio show. So for those of you who don't know, so it makes it easy to hear it. But as a dealership, you could have it where you engage in some of the communications to your customers of like, hey, you're trying to book an appointment. You can ask Cortana to do this thing. And that way you teach them, how do you engage with it? What do you want to get information for? Is it about wait times? Is it about anything you can imagine under the sun? So you start to train them of, oh, I do this thing and I can engage with you directly. And then as you add more features, as you add more functionality, then it makes it easier for the customers to adopt that technology, know what to do and how to do it. So it's less of that barrier to technology to get into it.
I love that because essentially you can tell this story then in a way that the punchline is essentially ask Siri, ask Cortana, ask Alexa. But then when you reverse engineer that, you're like, yeah, what are the problems that your customers are facing?
Well, and you think about it. If you remember back in the early 2000s, when you watched TV, at the end of most commercials, it'd say, and find us at www.microsoft.com. We're going through that same sort of transition now with digital assistants and with voice that we're breaking through that barrier where you have to train people what to do and how to do it. So you have to tell them, go to Siri and say, hey Siri, ask Subaru to schedule an appointment in Bellevue to get my oil changed. Like, is it, so you have to explain what to do and how to do it. And most people intuitively, because the type of actions they're taking, if you've done your research on the back end, you know what their problems are, what they want to do and how they want to do it, and you create your tool around that, not what you think they want, but what they actually want, then it's going to be intuitive and you'll see the adoption starts to happen. It might be slow at start because it is still new technology. People are still figuring out how to use it. But through the voice reports and the surveys we've done, people are using the tech much more frequently. The amount of people that own multiple devices, not just a cell phone, but let's say smart home speakers, went from the first year we did it like 10% to 40% to like 66% of respondents that said they were planning to purchase a smart home device that had voice enablement by the end of this year.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you too that, you know, whereas privacy was a huge obstacle to overcome, you know, 5 years ago or so, now you can see that the opposition towards that is kind of waning a little bit.
Yes, privacy is still a huge concern.
Well, it's still like, it absolutely still is a huge concern, right? But I think at the same time, it just shows that the culture of data privacy is not as, it's not as unknown as it once was. And because it was unknown, then there was just a lot of apprehension towards it.
Yeah, and I think part of it's the fact that people are seeing the value. out of engaging. So it's something that can not only give them answers, but helps them with their day-to-day life or does something they're interested in. So it's from everything from, if you look at the report, like playing music, to playing games, to asking questions and be able to make my life easier. The fact that we were talking before I came on, I have a 4-month-old. There's many
congratulations
times.
Congratulations again, by the way.
Thank you.
That's your second child.
Second child. Yes. I no longer have 2 hands because I have 1 hand with a 3-year-old and the other hand is trying to hold the 4-month-old in place. So I find myself using voice all the time to ask questions and get information because I don't necessarily have a hand available.
Yeah.
And so what's been interesting is as I've used it much more now that I have my 4-month-old, I find myself finding even more ways to use it that I hadn't thought of previously. Mm-hmm. And so I know I'm personally excited for this point in time when it's like, great, I need to make an appointment. I want to be able to do it all with my voice and not have to let go of a toddler and watch him run in the distance as fast as he can.
Well, let me help you out since you only have 2 hands. Let me help you out with a 3rd hand. And that is if Subaru of Bellevue, if you are tuning in.
Kirkland.
You need to help this woman out, okay? She has an oil change that needs to be solved or that needs to be done. She doesn't have, you know, a 3rd hand to help out with this stuff. So give her a call and hook her up. Christy, thank you very much for being on Wisco Weekly. I really appreciate it. And really dropping the knowledge of the whole, like, I love that whole people, you know, traditionally through advertising have been saying, find us at www. Now the new version of that is ask about us on your digital assistant.
Exactly.
I love it. So listeners, be sure you visit the episode page. Christy, how can people follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at Christy J. Olson. And unfortunately, there's too many ways to spell Christy. So CHRISTIJOLSON. That's probably the best way to find me. And you'll see that I am on and off depending on how active my children are. So I sometimes am very active on Twitter and sometimes I'm a little bit quiet because I'm keeping up with them.
Great. So listen, I will put her contact information on the episode page. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Wisco Weekly. As we end every episode, on behalf of Kelly, Rudy, and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salu, kampai, mabruk, tutsin, gambe, yamas, nastarovie, to the customer experience.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this enlightening discussion on digital assistance with Mrs. Christy Olson, and a big thank you to her for being on. Let's finish the top 3 popular questions that I get about car buying. The first question dealt with contrasting leasing versus buying. The second question dealt with demystifying your parents' sentiment about leasing. And here's the 3rd most popular question. When is it a good time to buy? There is an underlying assumption of this question that all cars are treated the same, meaning that there is no difference between buying a Toyota Camry, an Audi A6, or a Porsche 911 GT3. But there is a difference. One key differentiator is the availability of these cars. The more available, then a better deal is to be had, generally speaking. So understanding supply and demand principles will help you know when is a good time to buy a car. The second thing to consider is every sales professional and by extension retailer do not always align in their quote-unquote goals of the month or goals of the quarter. If a sales professional has sold a good number of cars and has made good money by the 20th of a given month, he or she may not be as motivated to do a quote-unquote end-of-the-month special. Similarly, an automotive retailer may meet their quarterly goal by the start of the last month of the quarter. And in this case, they may not be as aggressive in their pricing as another store 10 miles away. So knowing these 2 factors on the supply of the car and the goals of the sales professional and retailer will help guide you on when is it a good time to buy a car. So I hope answering these common questions helps you in your next car purchase or lease. Dun dun dun. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. Be sure you subscribe to the show on any popular podcast app and follow Wisco Weekly on social media.